C3 with TNA Wrestling and EHC. Everyone hates Cleveland, but why? The world needs Cleveland.
Welcome to another edition of Everyone Hates Cleveland, the podcast. I'm your host, Jim Pete, joined again by Nina Cole, with Nina Cola, my co-host. I told you this would be a regular thing. This is less than a week later, our second one. First of all, I just want to say thanks to everybody who's listened to the podcast. I know it's been a while since we potted. So we're happy you're back. Obviously, the World Series isn't hurting, but we should be here at least once a week, if not twice a week, if not three times a week, because you never know what the next couple of days is going to bring. But as I bring Nino in here, of course, the Indians won last night, 1-0. And since the Indians were in it, one of the best World Series games I think I've ever seen. One of those games where every inning brought something new and odd and strange. And somehow the Josh Tomlins have become aces. And somehow our bullpen has become the best. And somehow everything we talked about getting in people's heads and Tito Francona making moves, that somehow all of this happened in the span of like three innings last night. And the Indians managed to win the game 1-0. Nino, your initial thought before I'm sure we dive into some of the particulars, what are your initial thoughts on the game? What stands out to you?
I think just overall the from inning to inning, just watching the game unfold, it was kind of remarkable because you have, I mean, all those crazy stats about how this is the first World Series game to be like the starters to throw scoreless innings and not make it out of the fifth. And it just, all that is just kind of incredible how the game unfolded. And I mean, yeah, we're going to talk about it, but how some of these moves on both ends played out and how this game just, it just was something that it's, I mean, this whole run that the Indians have been on has been unbelievable, but game was probably like, all right, yep, top it off. That's quite unbelievable in terms of how that game unfolded.
But it was one of those games where all these moves are happening as you see Carlos Santana come out of the game and Jose Ramirez come out of the game and Michael Martinez becomes a central focus piece to this game and Andrew Miller gets taken out of the game and Brian Shaw ends up pitching more innings than him and all of these weird, strange things. And I remember thinking to myself, my God, if Chicago scores one run and this goes into extra innings, what the hell are we going to do? Like, what's our team going to look like? But, you know, okay, let's take this piece by piece because, of course, while I think the majority of the national networks made this story about Chicago. And I'm not trying to take that. I mean, it's the first World Series game in Chicago since 1945. And, you know, we know everything there is to know about, you know, curses and not winning championships. So we understand what Chicago's going through. So this isn't to say that Chicago shouldn't have been a part of the story. But I think the big story in Cleveland was Josh Tomlin making the start, not only making the start, but his dad being there. And, of course, his dad recently paralyzed in a story that I think probably should have been a lot bigger than it was in Cleveland prior to the World Series. But, you know, I guess my first question is, Nino, and I don't even know if this is the right thing to talk about, but you look at Josh Tomlin's season and you look at his struggles, in particular his struggles in August, as he started off the year pretty solid and had that summer swoon. If you look at the dates, and again, I was just kind of curious last night. I was kind of poking around and looking at the dates of his dad's troubles. It looks like his troubles started at the beginning of August. It looks like Tomlin's troubles started maybe a little earlier than that. But do you think it's possible that some of Josh Tomlin's troubles were exacerbated by his father, who clearly is a big part of his life, who clearly is a big part of the Tomlins' lives? This is a guy who works two jobs, is one of those guys, one of those blue-collar Cleveland guys that we would love so much to be in Cleveland. He's not a Cleveland guy, but it fits kind of that Cleveland blue-collar kind of narrative. Is it possible that Josh Tomlin's bad month might have coincided with, oh my gosh, his dad being, you know, having this circulatory problem, ending up paralyzed from the waist down? But beyond that, what a great story last night for Josh Tomlin to come out, pitch well again for, I think this is the fifth straight start in a row where he's been absolutely outstanding. Mm-hmm. But do you think maybe, I mean, it's hard to, he gets his break in midseason, but his dad is also having this problem. I mean, can we start to see parallels in perhaps why Josh Tomlin's season went the way that it did?
I think you listen to the teammates of Tomlin talk about how unflappable he is and just all sorts of stuff about he's just a gritty workhorse who doesn't really let the emotions take, you know, take advantage of them or get the best of them in any situation. But I cannot fathom going out and doing any job, doing any sort of just doing anything, going about your daily life, going about your daily routine without thinking about what he had to be thinking about with what was going on with his dad. I mean, that's, you know, that's stuff that would get to anyone. I don't think, you look at some of the numbers and you look at some of his usage in terms of his pitches, and there's been a lot about how he was, you know, relying on pitches that he doesn't typically normally rely on. And now he's like in this recent run, he's been getting back to what's been really making him and what has made him successful. So I think it's more performance related. It's more, you know, between the lines. I think that attributed to it. I think definitely that would had to be weighing on him, and the fact that he's, you know, flying back to Texas and coming back and he's with the team and he's not with the team. I think that would just inherently, I think that would mess with anyone. So I think that had a little bit to do with it. I don't think that was the overriding factor, because, you know, just hearing who Josh Tomlin is and how he goes about his routine and how he goes about pitching in a ball game and just his overall demeanor. I don't think that was, all right, this is it. This is the reason, this is why he's as bad as he is in August. It's because he's dealing with, you know, this stuff with his dad. I think it played into it, but I don't think it was something that really hindered him in the biggest sense.
You know, he comes out last night, has Chicago off balance all game, pinpoint control, probably was hurt more than helped by the strike zone of John Hirschbeck last night. And I'm not a guy who likes to talk about umpires. I really am not. And I kind of got in, but it seems to me, I mean, so there's a it's not a Vine, but there's a YouTube video going around on Twitter today showcasing several pitches that Indians pitchers threw last night and several pitches that Hendricks threw in particular in the Cubs threw that were 5 to 6 inches outside the strike zone. Whereas some of those Cleveland, several times Perez got up to walk off, and not only with Tomlin, but with Andrew Miller as well, a guy who's, I guess if you're one of those guys that say you build up kind of, you know, some capital as a starter over the years, and, you know, a guy like Clemens in the past and Johnson and Greg Maddux was really known for this, you would kind of add some inches to your strike zone. Certainly Andrew Miller would be that guy. I mean, this is a guy who's been pretty lights out for the past 3 or 4 years. He was even getting bad calls on calls, not on the line, but calls that looked 2 or 3 inches in the zone. You know, the fact that Josh Tomlin last night was able to give us 4 2/3 innings, probably could have given us more of lights out baseball with a strike zone that wasn't conducive to him, really says a lot about him as a player. Now, you know, this is kind of a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, this clearly was his biggest start, right? I mean, like, yeah. Josh Tomlin, as he cemented himself as a clear number five going forward. And I mean, I think we're probably, if the series goes further, I mean, obviously he's got another start in him, but if he doesn't, do we throw Tomlin into the basket? Like, say we can close out in game 5 or game 6. Well, does Tomlin get thrown into the basket of guys we see again, perhaps in the bullpen? I mean, Terry Francona is using every wrench, yeah, every screwdriver. I mean, we have not seen the last of Josh Tomlin, have we?
No, not at all. I mean, 54 pitches. And here's the thing with Tomlin. He's not a guy that, like, he's not – his game isn't velocity. He's not going to be somebody that overpowers you. So, in my mind, that's a lot easier – I mean, it's a lot easier for them to bring him back on any sort of short rest or any sort of situation where he's already pitched in the series, you know, prior to, especially with the fact that he only threw 54 pitches and they weren't really, like, I mean, he had some innings that were pretty low stress, even though it was a nothing game, you know, throughout the time that he and Hendricks were in there. It wasn't very stressful. It wasn't very high leverage. So there was, I think there's a lot left in that Josh Tomlin tank. So you're going to see him again. You may, you know, if the series does go to game six, you'll probably see him there as a starter. But you got to see how this game unfolds. Obviously, you have to see how tonight goes, game four, before you start, you know, planning and plotting what you're going to do with Josh Tomlin. But you're going to, like you said, you're going to see him in some capacity, whether it's as a starter later on or deploying him out of the bullpen to give you some innings, because he's got a lot left in the tank, especially after not going as far as I thought he should have went last night.
So, you know, you get past Tomlin, he pulls Tomlin, and it was one of those moves where I think the social media wanted to just like go nuts on Tito pulling Tomlin at 4 2/3. But of course, we talked about this on our last podcast. Francona has been, I mean, it's almost incredulous, these moves that he makes, these moves that are very similar to the moves he makes during the regular season that drives everybody insane. He went on it's almost like last night's game was a microcosm of all of this. And when you add the double switch in this National League, you know, adding Carlos Santana into the equation as a left fielder really makes all of this interesting. Before we get into the moves he makes, let's start with the first move, because it's starting to get to be a reality to question this. Carlos Santana played in left field last night, looked fine. Nothing went hit, you know, there were no gappers, there was no power alley shots. I think he caught one fly ball. He looked fine out there. Mm-hmm. But the question I have for you is this. When do you, and I understand the way Tito Francona works, and you can't, I mean, this is a guy who's brought us the World Series in his fourth season. But, you know, is the real question not whether or not Carlos Santana plays left field? Is the real question, when do you say, you know, Mike Napoli just isn't,
yep,
a guy you either have starting, or when do you at least bump him down in the lineup? Because to me, the guy's sitting in the middle of our lineup, and he left a lot of guys on base last night. He's been leaving guys on base all series aside from a couple of games. You know, you got Jose Ramirez sitting right there. You've got other guys sitting right there who could perhaps move into that spot. It's not like the Indians are hitting, but Mike Napoli seems to be kind of that fulcrum. Is it, I mean, do you stick with him as the guy? I mean, he's been there all year. Or is it time now, especially with the kind of you're out, you're playing against the Cubs, you're playing in a National League park. Is this the time to put Carlos Santana in at first base and to bench Mike Napoli?
I mean, at this point, it's a 2-1 series at this point. You're up. You're on the road. Like you said, this is a National League game for the next two games here, win or lose. I don't think that it's a bad move at this point. You're looking at a guy that, you know, for stretches through the season would absolutely carry the offense in Mike Napoli. You know, 100%. He had stretches where he just was the guy. And that's hard to look past in terms of looking at this. This is the World Series. This is the biggest series of the year. These are the biggest games. And to take a guy that clubbed over 30 home runs and knocked in a bunch of runs, to take him out of the lineup, that seems unfathomable. But he hasn't been hitting. He has not been producing. He's like you said, he's been leaving some guys on base, and he's been coming up in situations where you need him to come through, and he hasn't. And he's hitting in the middle of the lineup. He's getting the fourth most at bats in this lineup. You can't continue to do that when you have a guy. You can't sacrifice what Santana has been doing, because he's been Santana has been productive. He, you know, even if he doesn't hit, he gets on base. We all know this. It's the beauty of Carlos Santana. It's the reason that people go crazy over him, because they think he's terrible because he has a low batting average. But guys, there's value in him. He walks. He does things to make himself still productive. So in my mind, it's absolutely the right call, at least for tonight in game four, to say, you know what, let's, again, this isn't playing Carlos Santana in left field to get him in the lineup. Like you said, like, you know, Mike Hattery's been hammering the point home. This is a Mike Na- this is keeping Mike Napoli in the lineup by putting Santana in left field. And, you know, you can say what you want with what that entails. If you put him out there, the risks that are involved, having a guy who's never really played out there, playing his first, you know, innings, like real innings in left field, previous occurrences be damned, playing him out there, you know, this is a Mike Napoli thing, and Mike Napoli isn't hitting. And it might be, for right now, for tonight, with your best starter on the mound, you know you're going to be in a close game, you know. So you put Mike Napoli out there and hope he runs into one the way that he's swinging the bat. Okay, but I'd rather put
– Wouldn't that be better? But wouldn't that be better? So all we've been getting jammed down our throats this whole damn series is Kyle Schwarber, Kyle Schwarber, Kyle Schwarber, Kyle Schwarber. Wouldn't it be better? Like, I mean, this is just me. It's almost like Napoli's the totter to his teeter. Wouldn't it be better to have Napoli on the bench as a guy you can bring in to find exactly what you just said, to get that one pitch? And don't you think that Mike Napoli, this great guy in the clubhouse we've been hearing about all year, don't you think he would be okay with – see, this is the thing that drives me nuts. Part of me says, well, Francona's doing it because this is what he wants to do. This is his thing. He's a clubhouse guy, keeps the clubhouse happy. But don't we hear the same thing about Napoli? Wouldn't that make it okay for Napoli to say, you know what? I sucked. I almost made an error last night that almost cost us the game. I didn't hit when I could have hit. Mm-hmm. Should I not be sitting on the bench? And several people pointed out that you could make a case that Santana is a better first baseman. Not a pretty good case that he's a better first baseman there. So
he has been this year.
Yeah. So I mean, at what point does Napoli say, and I'm sure you're a competitor, it's a World Series. You're not going to walk up to your manager and say, you know, take me out of the game, coach. I mean, we don't want players like that. But wouldn't – I mean, this seems like a no-brainer.
To me, it does. And it's not – and you would think that it's not, hey, we're benching you. You're not starting. You're not playing. Like you said, there's plenty of opportunity for them to use him. And then if Tito's going to be double switching, it's not like, okay, Napoli's not starting. It doesn't mean he's not playing a good portion of the game. They could do what they did last night and do a double switch, and you know Napoli is in there in inning five, and then he's playing the majority of the game anyway. So it's like you're looking at a situation where, and I don't know, I've read some stuff and heard some stuff that I guess it's you know, Santana's been, hey, Aaron, I'll do whatever I need to do, I'll play left field, whatever makes this team better. I would hope that Mike Napoli takes the same attitude in this situation, and that they do what's right. And here's a question for you, and I, this is something I think of. It might be going a little bit off of what we're talking about here, but is – and I don't know. I didn't follow Tito when he was with the Phillies, but to me, he's had his success in Boston. He's had success in Cleveland. Obviously, the years in Philadelphia didn't go so well. He has – he's what, 10-1 in the World Series, but is the reason that he did not – do so well in Philadelphia is because he was a full-time National League manager? I mean, we talk about how maybe Cleveland's more of a – their roster is more of a National League type of a lineup. I mean, their roster construction for a National League series is bad because they don't have a much of a bench. I mean, like we've been saying, Michael Martinez in left field. But has this kind of exposed Tito, like, okay, yeah, these moves are crazy and these moves are working, but – long term, over the course of the season, this is maybe why he wasn't successful in Philadelphia, because he was doing these types of things on a routine basis. Again, I don't know. I never followed him in Philly, but pulling these double switches and having to do these sorts of these things. Look, I could have had a different roster, but I mean, is there like some sort of merit to what I'm thinking here?
Well, his Philly, if you go back and look at his teams in Philadelphia, they definitely weren't. Even our Cleveland roster has a vast amount of more talent than those Phillies rosters did. But couldn't you see, and I don't know, I mean, it's hard for me to go back to the late 90s and look at Terry Francona and see him with the same bravado he has now, because he clearly kind of has that moxie now, and he had it in Boston. And I can't imagine in his first stint as a manager he had it. But couldn't you see current day – I mean, I could just see it right now. Like, if for whatever reason Terry Francona were to ever leave Cleveland and end up in a National League city, like St. Louis, where you know he had talks with back in the day. Couldn't you just see him with the bravado to make these moves all the time and get run out of a town like in 3 weeks? Like I think that would be, you know, Nino, that would be a fun little maybe off-season kind of series of pieces, going back and looking at Francona's 4 years in Philadelphia and trying to compare them to his moves that look kind of, I guess we can try to come up with his moves in the World Series, because he did them in Boston in 2007. He did the same sort of thing, this bravado that he has of kind of pulling a string because it feels right. And they've worked. I mean, he's 10-1. I mean, you can't. You can argue him. You can argue him to, and we were talking off air about sitting across the table from him in front of like people and arguing with Tito Francona and him just sitting there and saying 10-1. You know, I mean,
he did that last night. Someone said something to him in the first question out of the gate was, but he like kind of looked and was like, that's the question, a 1-0 World Series. Yeah, that's the first question.
That was the best. I mean, so let's look at these moves. Okay. So the first move was the double switch. He brings in Tomlin, and then almost incredulously takes out Carlos Santana. And the funny thing about that, so the theory of that, you know, that move was that you don't want to have Andrew Miller bat. You pull off the double switch. You try to get his at bat as far back as you can possibly get it. So the switch should, in theory, be with a guy who's going to bat ninth. Santana was batting seventh down the line. So we end up having to pull Andrew Miller. So the first move, I guess, is I throw the ball to you. It's kind of a twofold. It worked out. We talked about this last week. Obviously in the World Series scenario, maybe we should talk about this first too, Dino. And I know we've got a time limit here, but is it one of those things where was Joe Madden sitting across the way? And you know, someone said something funny to me. It might even have been Mike Hattery behind the scenes. You know, I think today someone mentioned the fact that maybe Lackey wouldn't start today, maybe Lester would. And it got me thinking, like when you're with Joe Madden, we talked about this a few days ago. He comes out, he pulls this double switch, he brings in Andrew Miller, he takes out Carlos Santana, and Joe Madden knows who Carlos Santana is because Tampa Bay has asked, and when he was at Tampa Bay, I mean, it was, Santana was a guy they looked at. You take Santana out in the fifth inning. You put in Rajai Davis, who I don't think has hit since, he was in his low 30s. If you're Joe Madden, you're thinking, what the hell is he doing? I mean, is this one of those scenarios where, like we talked about, maybe Francona's best asset is making these crazy moves, getting in the noodle of some of these young guys and getting in the noodle of Joe Madden, who's trying to win Chicago its first World Series, trying to win his first World Series? Does this start to kind of fester in your brain? Like, what the hell is he doing? He's 10-1. Oh, my God. I don't know. Is this part of the strategy that Francona is so brave with this bravado of his that he just plays, takes other players out of it?
I don't even know. I really don't. I sat there last night just kind of like, what is he doing? Why is he doing what he's doing right now? I mean, this shouldn't be working, but it is. And like, who am I to sit here? Like we said, like, who am I to sit here and argue with it? I tweeted it out when it happened. I'm like, this is a dumb move. This is stupid. This is not, Tito is not being smart here. But
the first tweet I saw from you was, I'm driving to Chicago. Tell me what's happening. And I was like, what are you really? I'm thinking you got tickets.
Oh, no.
No. I didn't mean to. It was just, we do go on these tirades on Twitter. I just wanted to share that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and it's just like, and then there was some people after me like, oh, Tito's brilliant. You know, you can make a move. And I hammered this home and I'm going to keep saying it, but you can make a move. And it could be the wrong move. It could be the one that doesn't make sense, and it can work. And he's done it before, and he will do it time and time again. It doesn't mean it was the right move.
And that's
fine. And that's baseball. And that's great. And this is what's awesome. But I don't know. I really don't.
All right. So let's kind of go through these moves because, you know, bringing in Andrew Miller at any point. I think we can all agree that Francona's mentality from the beginning of September until today has been to keep his pitchers pitching at the highest level. And when I say that, I'm saying not dropping in velocity. We've seen him do it with Kluber. We've seen him do it with Bauer. We've seen him do it now with Tomlin. When Tomlin even loses a mile per hour on his fastball, we've seen him get tagged kind of out of the blue with home runs because, of course, you know, he loses just a little bit off of his pitches. So the surprise move to me, again, wasn't the Tomlin move. You bring in Andrew Miller. And I guess you can nitpick maybe he should have left Carlos Santana and it played out that way. I mean, was that first move? I mean, the first move didn't really set me off other than kind of raising my eyebrow that Carlos Santana came out of the game. Were you angry? I was a little upset at the first move. I don't know that I was angry at the first move until it played out the way that it played out.
Yeah, what seemed risky to me was using Miller without a lead. It's a 0-0 game. You're bringing in Miller. Like, he has brought him in the past when he's got a lead, and that's kind of been his you know, strategy and his process to using and deploying Miller and deploying his guys for high leverage situations. He didn't have a lead here. So, you know, if something happens, Miller gives up a lead. Now what are you doing? Like, okay, you use Miller. Now you start to get into that where we kind of saw in game two where, okay, he doesn't have a lead. How is the rest of this going to play out? Bauer's not really making anything happen. He's got to go to, he's going to Shaw early, and now he's bringing in Otero or McAllister, and now he's bringing in Salazar going to come and get a few innings? Now, that would make sense. You would want to piggyback him later in the series. Oh, no, he's going to come in. Okay, how many innings is he going to pitch? One? Okay, wait. What's going on? So when you bring in Miller as early as he did, that was kind of my concern was, okay, did he get enough for – did he get enough? Like, Tomlin, I thought Tomlin was pitching well. I didn't feel like he was any sort of danger of collapsing there. So to me, that was kind of where I was. I was like, I don't know if this is the best spot to be using Miller. But again, we talk about how much Miller's a Swiss Army knife of relievers, and you can kind of use him in all these different situations. And I guess we were just seeing a different situation that he was bringing him into. And strangely, it did. And we could talk about this in a little bit. You can kind of go down that path, but it kind of, and I'm reading something here and we can bring it up, but it kind of enlightened us into maybe a strategy that they might want to kind of consider moving on here with the rest of the series. But I don't know.
So here's the thing though. So walking this fine line, and I had the same concern with regards to Miller, because in my head I'm thinking, you know, so if this stays a 0-0 game, or, you know, if the scenario sets up right, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, does he come out the next time, you know, he's going to bat? And, I'm thinking, well, you know, perhaps, you know, is Francona literally in his head thinking, well, that scenario won't come up and he'll just pitch through it and it'll be 0-0. And I'm thinking that's no way to manage a ball game. So, you know, I mean, he was pitching well. He was, whereas in game one, he wasn't as efficient. You could see that he had his A game. He wasn't getting calls and was massively efficient anyway. Still, he struck out the side in his full inning. And I'm thinking, well, he's efficient. He's under 20 pinches. He's got at least another inning in him. And then he gets pulled again. So let's see. That was the move, if I remember correctly. I don't have it in front of me. They pull him for a hitter, and who hit for him?
I can't even remember here.
So that's right. So they bring in Martinez to pinch run. They bring in Coco Crisp, who singles. Mm-hmm. Of course, scoring the run that gives the Indians the 1-0 lead. Now, okay. Yes. So, again, you know, this fine line where he takes Miller out of the game, but they score the run to give them the lead.
Can we talk about how they scored the run, though? Like, okay,
Perez gets the single.
Yes.
Okay. You bring in Martinez for Perez. Oh, okay. Now I'm like, oh God.
So they take out
Perez.
They take Perez. Yeah. So now you're bringing in Gomes. Now, again, in a story that hasn't been told at all because it's now a national media story, Gomes has been gone forever. Like, my first thought is, wait, is who's our backup catcher? I had to think for a second. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Yan Gomes. And I was like, wait a second. Is he really healthy? And I'm like, God, I hope he's healthy. But then I'm thinking, so now we're going down the stretch without Perez, who's been, and I think Mike Hattery wrote this piece, who's possibly been the MVP of this team in the playoffs because of the way he's been handling the bullpen and the way he's been handling guys like Josh Tomlin and the framing aspect. Now, this isn't to knock on Gomes, but Gomes hasn't been a regular catcher. When was he last a regular catcher? It's been months.
Yeah. So how is, you know, a ball in the dirt, is he going to be able to block it? Like, you know.
So anyways, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
It's fine. And that was one of the things I was going through my mind is like, okay, and here's where I think I had the biggest problem with how that situation unfolded. And again, it worked. Coco Chris came in, got a single. They got the lead. But you get Perez, he singles. You run for him. So now Martinez is in the game. Naquin, and this isn't me rallying against the bunt, but you are setting up a situation because, yeah,
oh my
you're
playing
for one run. But you are setting up a situation with Naquin bunting where you are relying on Rajay Davis to come up with – like you're setting up a run-scoring situation for Rajay Davis – who ends up walking because they wild pitch.
Yeah.
So it works out. But you are in the bottom of the order in a pinch hitter who's this pinch hitter going to be? Like, who do you have on the bench? No, like, okay, maybe you use Gomes, but you're setting up a situation for the bottom of your lineup. And that's
Gomes, but even if you use Gomes, I mean, we're talking, okay, so Crisp gets the hit and it's a veteran hit. He ends up scoring the run. But to make that move, I mean, again, to make that move knowing that you have Rajai Davis and Andrew Miller at the time up and potentially a pinch hitter, and your pinch hitter is Chris, or I mean, that you're not playing the odds there.
Well, right.
I mean, and you can talk about, listen, I mean, I've been an athlete. You've been an athlete. I mean, you know, sitting in a locker room, I mean, you can't, I mean, listen, I mean, I get it. He understands, you know, he can look, he's, you know, like the guy in Twister, you can see the clouds coming and knowing that the Twister's coming, but you can't tell me you're playing the odds when you bunt over Michael Martinez to second, you have Rajai Davis who has, I mean, literally hasn't had a hit this series. And you have Andrew Miller sitting there with Gomes, who hasn't hit in almost two full seasons, and Coco Crisp. And God bless him, he has had a big hit, but you're depending on Coco Crisp. And this is no offense. I mean, and I'm sounding stupid, and I guess we both are because Coco Crisp got the hit. But that razor line that they played last night, you know, we had that error on Soler's ball by Chisenhall, who's all of a sudden looking like he's straight out of the Bad News Bears in right field after seeing – I mean, and then you have that almost error. I mean, God bless Napoli got in front of that ball, and he played it well, kept it from going past him, and kept it, you know, he kept the run from scoring. But when you're playing that razor line, if one – and again, I guess we sound stupid because nothing went wrong. Everything happened the right way. But if one little thing goes wrong, you're left with a depleted roster. Yeah.
And
you've lost Miller. So – okay, so as we get into this, they end up scoring the run. Martinez is in center. He ends up playing in third. He ends up with an at bat in the ninth. I mean, and I understand they make another move. They take out J Ram. They move Martinez to third.
Oh my God! I don't even talk about that.
Well, and they move Davis. I mean, I get that. So there you're playing to get the pitcher hitting ninth, but you're batting Martinez second. And people don't understand that while in theory that move was the correct move because you put the pitcher ninth, that Michael Martinez may full well be the worst hitter on our team. And I'm including pitchers. And, you know, I mean, I think it was Kevin Dean who posted a list of perhaps 35 pitchers who have a better, who are better at the plate than Michael Martinez. Yeah. Okay. It was August. Yeah. I mean, I get it. He can manipulate him in the field and he's a fantastic fielder, But I mean, I don't know, Nino. It seems to me like there's probably, I don't know, maybe 50 guys in the minors right now who can probably hit better than Michael Martinez, who can maybe be that Swiss Army knife in the field. I mean, Jose Ramirez can be that Swiss Army knife in the field if they could find a third baseman. But I'm just saying, I don't know. He plays that card. They don't score a run. And then, you know, the Cubs come out. They get runners on second and third. And we have – I mean, thank God we have, you know, the pitchers that we have in the bullpen. Yeah. So everything works out. And I guess we've kind of gotten our point across with Tito Francona. But they win the game 1-0. And, again, you know, we mentioned this in the last episode. Francona, you know, is the microcosm of a World Series different than a full season where he can pull moves like this, perhaps frustrate a team that you're playing against, and perhaps they work maybe a little better than they don't. Clearly last night they did. It's given us the 2-1 lead. As we go to game 2 in Chicago, Corey Kluber on the mound, short day rest. I'm just going to throw one statistic out to you. The last pitcher to win a game 1 and a game 4 was also a pitcher for an Ohio team. It was 1990. Jose Rijo for the Cincinnati Reds. It hasn't happened in 26 years. That being said, I'm not really sure how many times it's been tried. Corey Kluber, 88 pitches, 6 days rest. Or I'm sorry, 3 days rest, but 6 days rest prior. To me, you know, I think this is the third time in his career that he's pitched on short rest. Really a small window. He wasn't great against Toronto. But it seems to me that we could be getting maybe the good Kluber tonight. I mean, it's hard to say, but with only 88 pitches, having the 6 days prior, so he's pitched once in 9 days, I kind of think that we're going to get the zeroed in Kluber tonight.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're gonna see it. At this point in the season, it's not like this is the first time. Like, he did it earlier. He did it in Toronto, and he was fine. I think we're gonna be fine tonight with Kluber. You know, you may not win the game, but you're gonna get a good effort from Kluber. I think you're gonna get his prime stuff. I think you'll see somebody that'll go out there. He's been in the zone in this postseason. He'll just be able to locate. As long as he sticks to the game plan, they're gonna be fine. I don't think. He's going to be able to hit what he normally hits on his fastball. And as long as he's got that command of that other stuff, that secondary stuff, I think he's going to be fine. I think Kluber's kind of the least of our concerns for tonight. I think it's just going to be interesting to see how it plays out. If they do fall at this point, though, you're up 2-1. So it's a little bit of a different situation. It kind of like how it was in Toronto. It's like, okay, you're bringing him back on short rest, but you know, if it goes completely south, it's not all that bad. But if it goes the way that you want it to go and it works out, then it's one heck of an advantage to have. And it's why you kind of pull this move, because you're in that position. You can, you know, it's better to go for it and get another leg up than to go some different route and kind of get leg behind. They're in an advantageous position right now, and I think it's fine taking advantage of it, regardless of what happens with Kluber tonight.
I mean, they win tonight, Nino. They win tonight, you have 3 elimination games.
Yep.
They lose two at home. They lose tonight, they have a best of 3 series, and 2 of them are at home. I mean, it's
there. Have another Kluber start.
Yes, and you still have another Kluber start. And, you know, as we talk about Kluber, I think, you know, the kind of plus and minuses of Francona, I think going back to the game 1 start where people thought they may have pulled Kluber too early in that start with 88 pitches, might that have been his first chess? I mean, clearly, to me, in this series, that was the first chess move from Francona. Mm-hmm. He pulls Kluber in game 1 with 88 pitches, knowing that he's going to pitch game 4.
It was a good move.
It was a great move. I mean, at the end of the day, knowing that you have Miller coming in, you have the Miller, Shaw, you know, Allen with 3 innings. I mean, that to me is the ideal situation. Yeah. So So now you've got Kluber healthy. You've got him at 88 pitches. You should have a full strength Kluber. And the best part about all of this, they still have full strength Miller because he only pitched, I think 16 or 17 pitches last night. You really, you know, you have probably the one guy that you, if you see him tonight, you're only going to see a pitch or two from is Brian Shaw. But you basically, other than that, are at full strength. And Tomlin, of course. I mean, you're at full strength. You still have Salazar there sitting. You still have Merritt there. We don't know what they're going to do with him. So the Indians should be going into this full strength. I have two more things to talk about. Do you think tonight you were going to see – okay, so I guess this is a two-pronged question. Is Salazar – is Santana going to play left field or is he going to play first base?
I don't know. I think we both know what we would like to see and what should happen. Who knows at this point with Terry? I mean, I think we probably see him in left again, and it's a little. But then again, you're dealing with Kluber, who doesn't. You know, he's going to get a lot more swings and misses, so you can probably play Santana out and left and not have to worry as much. Like Josh Tomlin's a contact guy, you know?
Right, right.
That was a little bit more risky. Now it's a little bit less risky because you got a guy like Kluber who doesn't – he's not going to get as much contact because he's going to – you know, if he's on, he's going to get a lot of swings and misses. So you're not using your defense as much. So in that light, you know, that's maybe a situation where you're like, okay, well, maybe not – you know, maybe you don't go with you know, sitting Napoli and keeping Santana – and left. That'll be an interesting play. See how that one works out.
You know, the funny thing about all this, and I do want to kind of dive into this real quick before I ask you my final question. Mm-hmm. You know, as you watch that game last night, if you kind of took the big plays one at a time, mm-hmm. there are so many plays that went against the Indians. Think about this. First inning, Lindor hits a single, runners on first and third, he gets picked off. Mm-hmm. You have the error by Chisenhall in right, where I don't even know if it was called an error. I don't think it was, but he just misplayed it because he jumped. I don't even want to get into that. Yeah, you have the misplayed ball by Napoli that was made kind of okay because he didn't let it go through to put runners – put a runner on third base before ultimately a stolen base put runners on second and third. So I guess, you know, so many things went wrong for the Indians last night. They end up winning the game. I was thinking about our MVP question, and this is kind of my long way around this. You know, you said Jay Ram, who's been playing really well. I said Kipnis, who has not been playing well, has had a decent hit here and there, was playing okay in the field, but you know, is there a clear MVP for this team right now? I mean, it's a very odd series up to this point after three games, because you can look at the offense. I mean, you know, Lindor is clearly the guy who's been hitting the ball really well, and you can throw J-Ram in there as well, but past those two, it's not really been that great. You can talk about the two home runs from Roberto Perez and what he's doing behind the plate. You can talk about Corey Kluber in game one. You can talk about Andrew Miller. You can talk about Cody Allen. I mean, he's kind of getting the bum shake and all this, because if you look at Cody Allen's statistics right now and Andrew Miller's in this World Series, in the playoffs, they're almost identical. Is there a clear MVP, or is this the first time in recent memory where you look at a team or and you look at this Indians team and you say to yourself, wow, wow. I mean, it is a team effort.
It is, and that's how it's been all year, really. I don't think you – and that no, there's not – and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's been three games. I don't think there is one. And I think that's a good thing, because if you're trying to rely on one person, it's not going to work. I mean, it's just, they like you said, just talking about all those different pieces, you know, if you're starting banging your head against the wall, starting Mike Napoli and continuing to hit him in the cleanup spot because you're, you know, expecting him to do something, you're going down the wrong path. You need to get contribution from everybody, and you need all the pieces to play together and fit so that you win the game. And yeah, a lot of things didn't go their way last night. And like, as we talked about, Tino made a lot of strange moves, but they worked out, and things did bounce, you know, things would bounce their way. And yeah, it's just, it's interesting to see how, how this team has just continued to, against all odds, you know, find a way to win games. And again, it's not any money in particular. And I don't think that's how you need to draw it up. And I don't think that's the best way to draw it up, is to rely and depend on one or two people to do that. It's got to come from different areas, and it has so far. It's been, you know, Perez hitting the home runs, playing defense. It's been, you know, Kluber pitching lights out in game one, or in this last game, the clutch hit from Coco Crisp. And it's just a bunch of different things. And again, that's kind of how you win a World Series, is to get contributions from everybody, unless the other team is just playing like crap and one guy just busts out, which again, we're talking about the postseason here. And we talked about it last time. It's a different type of game. It's different. It's much, much different in the postseason. Playoff baseball is, you know, we're seeing it now. It's not, you know, the Cubs, great offense, but that's not always going to carry you to a victory when you're talking about really good pitching. And it's not always going to work out that way.
I got to tell, I mean, so my final question to you is this, and I, as you're saying all of this, I think about this team, and I can't help but think future, but I do, my final question to you is this, and this is kind of the final Tito move that we'll talk about. If you are Terry Francona, and you know, and I know that just thrills you. If you are Terry Francona, who is your game five starter?
Well, now it's Bauer, but I really thought that they should have went down. I mean, yeah, you want Tomlin hitting in the National League Park, but I think it would have made much more sense to align it Kluber, Tomlin, Bauer, Kluber, and then game five is, you start Merritt, you start Salazar, some sort of mishmash.
Yeah, and then
you bring Tomlin back in game six. And now it's looking like, okay, we're going to go with a three-man rotation, which is fine. My game five starter is, at this point, we'll see what we get with Trevor. I mean, I love him. I think he had a lot of – he wasn't able – this is something that, you know, Mike and Adam Burke and I talked about last night. He wasn't able to finish. He was not able to get guys out. He would, you know, get up. So I don't think Bauer had a bad start. It'll just be interesting to see how he adapts and kind of adjusts his game plan. Because he's going to need to, if he's going to get any sort of length out of a start on game five, he needs to figure some things out and kind of have a different game plan, because the one that he was going with in game two was not working. It just did not look good. And I don't think it had anything to do with the pinky or anything like that. I think part of it is he hasn't been pitching a whole lot. I mean,
that's the big part. Yeah.
He needs to trust Perez. He needs to just execute a game plan, and he did not pitch terrible, but he didn't look like how he should, and he needs to get back to a better game plan, and I think he'd be fine. He at least gives you an opportunity.
His arsenal is so good, and I think for me it's just mileage. Like, he needs the mileage, and I think this start will be better if, you know, he's a guy. You know, there's a lot of hitters on this club, on the Chicago club, that like the ball low in the zone. And he's a guy who likes to climb the ladder. And if he can, as you said, if he can finish it off, it just seemed, you know, he would get nice, you know, he would get good pitchers counts, but I can't tell you how many times it was 1-2, 0-2, and it would end up a full count or end up walking a guy. And I think he gets, you know, it's, and I hate to bring in, I'm not a guy who thinks that Trevor Bauer and Yobaldo Jimenez are comparable, other than the fact that they have this, they have the ability to throw a variety of different pitches. And I think as Yobaldo got older, he had a hard time figuring out what to finish with. And I think, I think Bauer runs into that on occasion where he can't, either it's not locating or he spends a lot of time calling pitches off, which I like. I mean, Trevor Bauer is one of my favorite pitchers. We'll see if he can give us length tomorrow, give us length tomorrow, regardless of whether we win or lose tonight, who knows, maybe he'll be the World Series.
If he can clinching. Give you three or four, I mean, I'd be good at that.
Because the reason why Merritt hasn't pitched yet, know the reason why Salazar only has an inning is because they're probably specific to this start so that they can come. And that is fine, because if Merritt was the guy to start this, I mean, you know that Bauer would be the guy who'd piggyback on him anyway. So it may just be in reality, if you say you want Ryan Merritt to start ahead of Trevor Bauer, then you just don't pay attention to pitching very much. So, all right.
I want to bring something up real quick for you. And it's interesting that this comes from the moves that were happening last night, but. So I just read the latest August post on Fangraphs, and he might have stumbled in, Terry Francona speaking, might have stumbled into a matchup that he can continue to exploit with Brian Shaw versus Kyle Schwarber. Yeah. I mean, they were talking, he mentioned some quotes here from Shaw having already played him and already pitched to him. You know, they tried to go away and he ended up getting hit off him. So they kind of adjusted the game plan and pitched more to what Brian Shaw likes to do. Like how he says that for him, he would rather pitch away from righties and into lefties as long as he's locating. And that's exactly what they did to Schwarber. And I think that's something that you mentioned, you might not see Shaw tonight. I would put him in. if Schwarber comes in for a pinch hit, I'm matching up Shaw, and I'm using Shaw against them, and then that's it. Like, that's something. I mean, to me, like, that's something you can exploit. And all this talk about Schwarber, and I mean, yeah, I get it. To me, it's I'm starting to get sick of the complaining about people talking about Schwarber. Like, to me, it's like, okay, we get it. Joe Buck likes Kyle Schwarber. I'm talking about it for once. But this is something that maybe Tito stumbled upon.
My question, did he stumble, though? Because here's the thing. Like, they had the camera on Francona when Schwarber was walking out, and he never even looked up. There was no hesitation whatsoever. So I wonder, and this is where there was an interesting interview with Francona, with Antonetti sitting there with him at the end of September. And it's when Francona was talking about the great relationship that the two of them had, which was eye-opener for me because, like I said in the last podcast, I always felt that it was a Shapiro thing with Francona, and that Antonetti was kind of the fringe player. He was talking about how he utilized numbers, to an extent. And how he lets other guys in the system kind of do that for him, and that he, there are some plays that override that, and there's some instances where he kind of runs with that. I wonder if that's one of those things where he knew right away. Maybe that conversation happened with Brian Shaw prior, because my first thought with Andrew Miller coming out of the game was, well, now Schwarber doesn't have, now Madden's free to use Schwarber whenever they want to, and at the end of the day, Francona didn't blink even once. And honestly, Shaw owned that at bat. I mean, that wasn't even a close at bat. Maybe he fell upon it. Maybe it was something planned. Either way, you're right. If you're going to bring Shaw into the game tonight, it may be to one guy. And it's going to be fun. I mean, but who knows? I mean, this is one of those games where we could see a 45-pitch outing from Andrew Miller if they're winning. So this is going to be a fun game. We have all the tools at our disposal tonight. That's the fun part about it. And even if we don't win this game, there's still a bit of control. The best news for all of us, they're coming back to Cleveland for game 6. My last thought here is this, and I hate looking forward, I hate looking to the future, but the whole time we've been talking about this weird team, this weird thing, way that things are going, and how we're up 2-1 in the World Series against a team that won 103 games, a team that Theo Epstein has been building with trades and moves and is looking like the 90s Indians with pitching, which scares the crap out of me going forward. But here's the great thing about our team. we're up 2-1, and you could make a legitimate case that this is, I'm not going to say 50% of our team next year, but not far from it. I mean, we, our starting rotation will be better next year, obviously. Obviously, we are winning. So the worst case scenario in March is that we run into injury problems. Well, guess what? We did. Into pretty major ball players, and we're still in the World Series. So all I have to say is this. Whatever happens over the next – I mean, and we're sitting here on a Saturday. We'll know by Tuesday or Wednesday what's going to happen in this series. Whatever happens in the next 5 days, boy, oh, boy. This offseason is going to be a lot of fun, whether we win or whether we lose, because all we're going to be doing is reloading. And, I mean, what a team we got. I mean, and our window is pried open. We've got sticks holding it open. We've got nails into the windows. I don't even know if we have a window. We got like this 4 or 5 year fun little ride in front of us with this pitching staff and with this system coming up where perhaps people better start, I don't know, paying attention to this front office that continually develops not only our team, but I don't know, 8 or 9 other teams because they steal our front office guys. I don't know. Really quick thoughts on that. Nino, I know you got to go and then we'll close up shop.
Yeah. I mean, you just need a team that in the regular season that is built to sustain and win you 90 plus games. And looking at the pieces that they have now and the pieces that they don't have because of injuries, they have that. And that's all you need. Because once you get to the postseason, it's a different animal, as we've seen. Because this team is not – like, this team in the regular season, it's probably not winning 90 games. I mean, let's be real here. Because you've got one starter that you know that you can rely on. You've got another guy that they don't even – like, they pitched him, and he's not even getting out of the fifth inning. They got another guy with a mangled finger. And then they don't have two starters after that. They'd be calling up people from Columbus.
You kind of have Clevinger, this weird guy.
You have a catcher who hits 150. You have a...
Who had Bell's policy, who, you know, I mean...
Your left fielder doesn't have any sort of an arm, and he's...
Michael Martinez played in the ninth.
Michael Martinez is your primary bench option. What else?
I got into an argument with a Boston Red Sox fan last night.
Tyler Naquin can't hit a fastball.
And he's terrible defensively. I mean, our outfield is terrible.
So this team that we're seeing right now, yes, there's pieces on it that'll win, that'll help them win a lot of games. But a lot of the pieces that would help them sustain over a season, we're going to have those next year. So, yeah, you're giving yourself a good chance to get back to this stage because of the depth and because of the talent that you do have that's not here right now, but did in some ways help them get to this point. And I mean, at this point you're playing with a team that shouldn't be here, but in this sort of environment is thriving because of again the moves that are being made and just the situations that you can take advantage of being in the playoffs. Because you're dealing in a 7-game series, you don't have to think about the long term of a season. You don't have to go with a 5-man rotation. You can take advantage of these situations and these circumstances, which is great.
What a weird damn series! What a weird damn season,
though, man. That's what makes it fun.
I mean, my dad. My dad's a Yankees fan. You know, I saw your picture with your dad at the stadium, and my dad and I grew up going to Indians games. You know, that's how I became an Indians fan. Is that was the local team, so he had season tickets, and my dad, you know, he kept saying we at the game or watching the game last night at the TV, and he's looking at this Cubs lineup, and he keeps looking over at me, and he goes. He doesn't pay attention to the Indians like I do. He's like, how in the heck are the Indians even here? He's like, where's Brantley? And I'm like, oh, yeah, 11 games, Dad, 11 games. That's all I'm going to say about that. I mean, Brantley was arguably our best offensive player, and he hasn't even played this year. I don't know that you could script it any better than this. I mean, this is Major League 3, Major League 4, I guess, all put together. I mean, if they win this World Series, I'm sad. I mean, the worst part about Wednesday for me, if it goes that far, or even if we lose it, is that the season's over, because I don't know that I'll bond with a team more than I bonded with this team this year. I mean, sure. what a great season it's been. All right, Nino, I know you got to roll out of here. See, we're pushing that 12 o'clock deadline right up to the minute. But all right, we're gonna close thing out. This thing out. I suspect, dependent on what happens tonight and tomorrow night, we will be back soon. At the latest, you know, of course, Game 7 will be Wednesday night, so we'll probably be back at somewhere in that ballpark. But my God, we are two games away from the World Series. So, I mean, I guess, I know. I there's so many things going through my head, I can't even say it. But with that said, two games away, up 2-1. Have a good one. Go Tribe.
Have a good night, everybody.